Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Hutchcroft, photographer, freelancer, and curious question asker. Join me for half an hour each week while I sit down with inspiring photographers and pick their brains about growing their business, authentically connecting to their clients, and being a good human in this changing industry. If you're ready to take your photography hobby to the next level and turn it into an actual business, you're in the right place. If you want to hear real-life advice from professional photographers and start building the future of your dreams, don't go anywhere. Here we go. Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Unscripted Podcast for Photographers. Today on the show, we have David Suh, a portrait photographer, educator, and content creator based out of LA. You guys may know David from his 60-second TikTok clips, which are an educational goldmine for all things photography and posing, or you might have stumbled across his beautiful portrait work on your feed. Either way, I'm super stoked to have him on the show because we get to break the form of short, snappy reels and TikTok videos and spend a good hour going deep with in-depth conversation about posing, beauty standards, and identity. After over a decade in the industry and a lot of time spent reflecting on himself and refining his craft, he has so much valuable information to share that just might transform the way you approach photo shoots forever. Stay tuned. This is a good one. So if we could just start and introduce yourself to our audience. I think a lot of people already kind of know who you are, but if you could just give us a little background about who you are, what you're about, what you love, what you're here for.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is David Suh. I'm a portrait photographer, a content creator, educator. I'm very optimistic. I love people. I love transformations and empathy and caring about people. The other day, my client brought in some cookies. She baked some cookies for my team, and she didn't know I had a peanut allergy. And she's like, "Oh my gosh, I brought some peanut butter cookies." And I was like, "It's okay. I will, if it makes you happy, I'll still have some."
No.
That's kind of like the energy I give.
Like, I'll put my body on the line to make you feel good.
Yes. Just to make you feel good. I'm definitely a big people pleaser at the core of my heart. And I think there's a big influence from that into who I am today. But yeah, that's just a little of who I am.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about how you got into photography. I feel like, yeah, I've heard you sort of speak about your photography story elsewhere, but it seems like one that a lot of people can relate to, you know, where it's like you got the family camera, you're taking some photos and you kind of maybe taking some videos and you really just like fell in love with the medium. And you moved around a bit growing up as well. You kind of moved from, correct me if I'm wrong in this order, but you lived in South Korea and Hong Kong, and then you moved to California. I'm curious about what photography's role was in this sort of in the move and what your relationship to it was as you sort of made sense of the world in different cultures, and yeah, how your relationship to photography has changed as you sort of grown more into yourself.
Yeah. So I guess the timeline, it's quite wonky in terms of like birth. This happened in New Jersey.
Wow.
Which is like, whoa, in New Jersey. Yeah. So pretty much I peaced out with the citizenship.
Nice.
After birth, like a year in New Jersey. My sister, my older sister, was not lucky to be born here. So she's always very envious of that. I think the US is one of the few places where you can, where you're born there, you get the citizenship. So that was, I'm always forever grateful for that, because now I can be back here to work here and do all the shenanigans that I do. And yeah, so after that, we family moved to Korea up to kindergarten there, and then moved to Hong Kong from first to eighth grade, and then moved back to Seoul for high school, ninth to 12th grade, and then moved to California for undergrad at UC Davis.
Nice.
I know it's a lot. It's just a lot of like back and forth. But I only started photography, I think we can fast forward to high school in Korea. So Hong Kong, there wasn't much influence at all in terms of just photography, in terms of, I think, just me as a human being. I think a lot of what I do is about me and finding out about who I am, my identity, my purpose, and how I can help the world and the people. So in the sense of that, I think, you know, having grown up with different culture and different people, different ideas, it's definitely shaped so much of who I am today. But in terms of photography, just alone at that time, it wasn't really existing in Hong Kong.
Okay. So it kind of started to kick off in Korea.
Yeah, started to kick off in Korea. My first passion was dance when I was watching like a lot of YouTube. At that time, YouTube was really just popping off as like when people were just uploading whatever they wanted to around that time. I think it was lots of like cat videos were going up, but also just lots of people just posting things, people playing piano. We weren't doing things like, hi, my name is this and I'm going to play you a song. It was just like a random recording of someone playing a piano.
Yes.
And that's when I started to learn some dancing off of YouTube. And soon enough, I wanted to start videoing my dance too, to add to, I guess, this world of the internet. I pretty much made a PowerPoint to convince my dad to get us a new upgraded camera that had video functionalities. This was, I think it was like the first few rounds of mirrorless cameras. It was like the Sony camera. I started dancing in front of the camera, videotaping. And then because I had my camera around, it essentially became mine. And I just started going around school, photographing friends, picnic day, sporting events for yearbook. That's really just like how I started getting into photography. And I guess specifically to Korea, my foundation was in street photography, because just if you imagine Seoul and Hong Kong, big cityscapes, so much going on, lovely architecture. So that was actually my, in terms of just Korea and Hong Kong, like in photography, I guess street photography was the most influence there because of that. And then soon enough, I realized I liked taking pictures of people on the street more so than just architecture or food or whatever was happening. I found that there was a bit more, something was tougher. There was a bit of more of a challenge in photographing people. There was many relationships going on there. There was not just me and the camera anymore. Because if I photographed like a stray cat or a broken bottle on the floor, then it was just me and the camera. But I realized when I was photographing people, I had to be mindful, especially if it was street photography. There was not just me and the camera, there's me and the person and the camera. What is their relationship like with getting their photos taken? There was something really, I couldn't really put my finger to it at that point, but it was just really fascinating at that point. I liked the challenge. That was my photography influence, I guess, having grown up in Korea.
Do you remember the first time you sort of asked a random person on the street if you could take a photo of them?
Did I ask someone? I think I was way too shy and introverted at that point. It was very much of, I think at that point when I was doing street photography, it was more so just in the public, crowd, people moving around. So more so like sneaking in a shot versus humans in New York, right? It's like someone going up to someone thinking, hey, can I quickly get a photo of you? And then they pose kind of thing. It was more so just the, how do I frame up the shot where this beautiful landscape is? And if I want to get someone just passing by, or maybe vice versa, I see the person first, I'm like, ooh, can I quickly get a snapshot?
Yeah, right. So you'd kind of like frame it up and then like wait for someone to kind of come through and then you'd snap.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I feel like you spoke to something there just before about the relationship that you started to notice between you and the camera and other people in the camera and what their relationship was to the camera and like being seen in that way. And I feel like that, you know, might've been something that you just sort of, maybe it was just a subtle thing that you were noticing like on the periphery of your sort of street photography. And then it's sort of the way that it's developed in your life now is something that's like so central to the role that you have as a portrait photographer. And I guess it's just always interesting hearing people's backstory and hearing about these ways that these tiny little sparks kind of develop and then turn into something as time goes by. And I feel curious about when you started to really develop that of, oh, okay, there's really something here in this person and their relationship to the camera and my role in that. You talked about identity before and how, you know, identity is this thing that you're really interested in. And how do you think photography has a role in constructing this identity?
Constructing an identity for
someone else, I guess. So it's like you're helping them present themselves in this way. And so you have to get to know them. You have to get to know who they are, what their relationship is to the camera.
Of course.
How do you help people be seen in the way that they want to be seen?
Yeah. So this is, I guess, really diving into what I do now. Like, what does David really do for people, clients? This is something that I've been thinking about for a while. So I've been photographing clients for over a decade, and it's definitely evolved. It's been refined. But every time my clients would, especially in the last 3-4 years, my clients would always say, wow, this is such a healing, such a transformational experience, such a therapeutic experience. And then I'm here like, this is so amazing to hear, but I don't know what's going on. I mean, I'm here giving you an amazing time. And then to hear that, I'm like, wow, do I really, you know, I'm also not the best at taking compliments. So I'm like, ah, that's a lot for me to hear. But I'm so happy for you, you know?
Just like crawling into your shell, like, thanks.
Essentially, yes. Yeah. So I've always been very curious about what really does happen, because I'm over here just providing a very hands-on experience, really just taking care of my clients in the most nurturing, loving, patient way I can. And then all of a sudden this transformational thing happens. So I've actually even been talking to my therapist about, hey, what is going on here? What happens in the studio that this is happening to my clients? And what I've really come down to is helping them see that identity. And to go further into that is, a lot of my clients, they, when they see their photos, they say, oh my goodness, that isn't me. And I think we've all experienced that as photographers, when like, it's a common reaction people have, oh, I can't believe that's me kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? But even before the photo shoot, the main question I ask my clients is, who do you want to see in these photos? How do you want to feel when you see this person in your photo? What do you feel? So it's a very introspective, lots of reflection going on in this experience. And they're very quick to say the person that they are. Many times it might be, oh, like I give a lot. I think that's a common trait of my clients. I'm a very giving person. They don't have a lot of time for themselves. They might be passionate about projects. They might be quirky. They might be funny. The things that they say they aren't might be things like, oh, yeah, I'm cute, but I'm not baddie, or I'm not sexy. I can't be powerful. Sometimes I can't even be feminine. I don't feel pretty. So those are the things I actually challenge a lot of my clients. And many times that becomes the things that they kind of want to see in these photos. I think it's one thing to help them see that photo, right? Like I can create a really beautiful photo for my clients. But the next thing to do is connect why that image is powerful to them. Because if I don't do any connection for them, they leave the studio with this beautiful photo and they're like, oh, there was some magic that happened in that studio. And we kind of like fabricated this person of a princess in the studio. And therefore that person only exists in this photo.
Right.
But that isn't the truth.
Right.
And what I tell my clients is, let's think of it this way, of how often do we get to see ourselves? If we think through that, typically it's through our reflection in the mirror. When we get up throughout the day, checking if there's anything in our teeth after a meal, checking our hair, and then before we go to sleep. And even if we think about those moments when we see ourselves in the mirror, it's in a very specific way, a very specific mindset. It's a very critical mindset of, let me make sure everything looks good.
Yeah.
So then I feel like as we grow older, we start having these more stubborn of a perception of ourselves. Like I mentioned earlier on, we're very quick to say, yes, these aren't me. These aren't me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm challenging that. We're such unique, complex human beings that feel through life and these emotions and feelings that we have, we can't even label with one word. And when we feel these things, it inspires us to think a certain way, act a certain way, and we express it to the world, whether we want to or not. And people will see it, whether you're a loved one or a stranger. And I swear to you, all these things that we say we aren't, we are. We are this incredibly beautiful person that express all these things. You might be walking through your local farmer's market, listening to your favorite music with AirPods on, smelling some flowers, and someone across the street might see you and be like, wow, that person is so carefree. They're so beautiful, so charming. Someone might see us at a coffee shop chatting with our friends about this amazing passion project that we're working on, and they might see us and say, wow, they're so confident, they're such a leader, they're such a badass, being able to talk about something they're so passionate about. And then maybe our partner gets to see an intimate side of us, a sensual side of us. So then I always ask the last question I ask is like, who gets the honor and the opportunity to see us? And it's everyone except us.
Yeah,
everyone except us gets to see all these sides of us. Everyone except us fall in love with us. There's people that fall in love with us. There's people that find us attractive, find us all these things that we will always somehow keep denying and say, oh, that's not me. There's the first time, I think a couple years ago, I'm 29 now, I think maybe like 25 or 26. So like 3 years ago, I heard for the first time, my date told me, Dave, you're sexy. I was like, oh my God, what do you mean? And like every bone in my body was just like, I had this weird physical reaction. I was like, ooh, that is not me. I was like, you're joking. You're just saying that to, I don't know, whatever your intentions are with that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Essentially what I do is, you know, like for me, like I help my clients connect to themselves and meet that person for themselves. And that, when we bring it back to the question of what is the relationship with photography and identity for my clients, I think it's that. It's truly helping them see so much more of their identity than who they think they are.
Yeah. And it is kind of almost like, I don't know, you're asking them how they've constructed identity for themselves by being like, how would you like to be seen? And then there's kind of this deconstruction of identity that happens where you're showing them sides of themselves that they don't normally see, or that they like might not be aware that they have. And then in successful scenarios, it's sort of what they come away with then is this new awareness of the complexity of their identity and like the layers of their identity. And the truth of that is really that like there is no one identity that anyone gets to inhabit for their whole life. They're just like these dynamic, changing individuals. And I think that's really cool because photography does allow people this capacity to see themselves from an outside perspective, which we don't get the opportunity to do. When you're working with clients and you're talking to them about who do you want to see in this photo or what are you trying to channel in this photo, this is kind of more technical, but how do you know how to customize the poses for your clients? Like, what's your process for this? Do you have a set of poses that you sort of plan ahead of time after having done sort of a pre-shoot sort of consultation? Or do you just sort of wing it on the day? What's your process around that?
So now I've gotten to a place where I'm finding out about my client a day or a couple of days before. I have a studio manager who does all the bookings for me, and she's taking the client through all the styling and the consultation. Yeah, I just kind of show up and say, okay, this is a client, and I'll take them through an incredible journey. So when it comes to the posing of things, I talked about this recently online where I said, sort of the TikTok named king of poses, I don't just look at someone and think of XYZ poses. And I feel like if I do that, that sounds a little odd to me to see someone and be like, huh, these poses are going to work for that person. The reason why I don't like that is because there's judgment within that, right? Like,
yeah,
it's like me saying, oh, there's a person crossing the street. If that person wore this dress, they would look great. If a person did this career, they would be great. If they ate this or if they did this pose, they would look great. That's not for me. That's me projecting my standard of whatever that is, whether it's beauty standard, whatever it is. It's me projecting them onto them without, it's a one-way conversation.
Mm. I hear that, but I also feel like there's an element of people wanting some kind of direction during a photo shoot where they're like, I don't know how to be in front of a camera. I don't know what's going to look good. I don't know how to stand, what to do with my hands. There is an element of kind of needing to sort of step into the role of a photographer and be like, okay, I got you. Let's try this. Let's try this. How do you feel about this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So with that being the foundation, I walk my clients through everything.
Right.
So I think the best way to put how it feels being photographed by me is your logic brain really takes a back seat. And whenever I start a photo shoot with my clients, I tell them, hey, today's going to be pretty much a dance class or a yoga class where you're not looking at yourself. I'm your mirror. We're going to be just essentially moving our bodies together. So if you see any of the content I put online, you get to see my clients sort of just mirroring me. Like we're two people just moving our bodies together. And I always tell them, hey, many times when we think about photos, the first thing we think about and focus on is what do we look like? Ah, how's my hair? Is my dress looking okay? Is my arms looking okay? Can you make sure it doesn't look muscular, or can you make sure it does look muscular? Rarely do we think about how do we feel. And so as I guide them through this, I tell them, I want you to really stay conscious about how you feel through these movements. Because the really big thing here, the foundation on top of what I talked about of not projecting, is posing to me is body language. We speak with our body. We've been speaking. This is a language that we learned first before anything else as a baby. We learn to speak with our bodies. We learn this language of being able to read other people's body language and also learning to speak with our own body as a language.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start seeing posing as a language, and you just think about just any language, what is the main functions of language? It's to get across information. That's one. It's like the basic function of language. Number two is being expressive. We want to express emotion. That's where things like we use language for poems, for singing, and telling someone that we had a hard day or an exciting day. We are getting emotion across. We're telling them about who we are. So it's the same thing. When we use language, we get to express who we are. So when we start using our body to speak through posing, that makes us feel a certain way. When we feel a certain way, then that's what we express. Something I learned in college, in a random psychology class, was when we feel scared, we shrivel up. But when we feel strong or like a leader, we open up, we get our chest up high.
Mm.
And the teacher was telling us the same thing. It can be done vice versa. Our body can also influence how we feel. So if you are scared before going up to do public speaking, your body will naturally shrivel in. But instead, our professor said, go to the mirror in the bathroom, open up like you're Superman or Wonder Woman, and then you will start to let that influence you as well. So what I do now with my clients is, as we talk about who are you, how do you want to feel, who do you want to see, I really take into account who they want to feel. If that is someone that's badass, confident, feminine without sacrificing power and leadership and boldness, then I need to feel that myself. So that's why I'm mirroring the poses. I need to do the poses. I need to be in touch with my emotions and my body and my feeling. So I start moving first. I need to see how I feel. Do I feel confident in this pose? And then as I connect to that, because I have the vision in my head as an artist and a photographer, but I need to make sure the feeling is coming through.
Mm.
Then I communicate that to my client and we mirror that. And then that will also then match the vision I had in my head, along with the fact that that's what they start feeling and expressing. they're no longer thinking about, oh my gosh, what I look like. They look wonderfully in place, in tune with their body, with the autonomy of who they are. And that's all I need to photograph them and show them, look, this is what happens when you are unapologetically you.
Totally. And I can imagine as well, like when you start to sort of move like that and they're like mirroring you, there would be this sort of like subtle conversation in body language that begins to bloom between you two, where it's like you're sort of feeding off what they're giving back. And like it kind of goes like back and forth. And it's like this sort of fluid interconnectedness mm-hmm. of like, yeah, information and emotion through the body language, which is really cool. I imagine your background in dance would have really helped. Just you being comfortable in your body and like making shapes, you know?
Yes. A lot of people are connecting those thoughts, but it's not as like, I know it makes sense. I know it makes sense, but just because I danced, there was a big disconnect. I hated being in front of the camera. I was super shy. I was super introverted. But when I started dancing, I would be so ambitious and so cool. But the moment a camera came up to take a photo of me, that wouldn't translate. I wouldn't know what to do with my body. So I had to connect all those dots really with still empathy, still thinking about empathy. What does beauty standards mean to me? What does photos mean to me? Who do I want to see in these photos? And then I had to really tap into deep inside and put all those together and say, ah, like, I can start moving my body in a way that I can feel. Because when I dance, it's in a really cool way of executing a freestyle to a song that I've never heard before and then being like, wow, that was dope. But then it's not about this deep connection to this is who I can be. This is, I can be this sexy human being. You know, like I'm not really channeling that. And there was a lot of just having to tap into my emotions again. There was a lot of levels to be unlocked for me to get to where I am. I think now as I teach, I think if anything, as I teach, it's really good for me to be in tune with my body physically. But being in touch with my body emotionally was a lot of work that I had to do for myself, photographing myself and giving myself the same patience, love and care I give to my clients.
Yeah, it's always the hardest to give it to yourself, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh, geez. Do you have any, I don't know, this might be a little bit reductive. I am curious about whether you have any specific posing tips you think like new photographers like need to know.
I always try to come back to like the basics of things because I'm like, now I'm so, this is my world. And it's tough to say, tap into your emotions and start feeling it yourself. Which is a big thing. I do want, if photographers out there that want to go levels deeper than just memorizing XYZ poses to have as these cards to play during your shoot, I really want you to start thinking about like how can you feel these poses? This is another reason why I get into dresses. I want to feel how my clients feel. And, you know, sometimes it can be as simple as my client saying, David, I don't have pockets in my pants because a lot of women's pants don't have pockets. So I started not having pockets in my pants. And I said, oh, now I understand. I feel it. Not just, oh, okay, I get it. I feel it. If I wanted to channel a beautiful, flowy, feminine, princess-like vibe, and I'm out here in jeans and a tank top while my client is in this gorgeous dress, how do I direct that? So that's why like I'm so open to putting on a dress and saying, oh, it's okay for me to feel this way and feel beautiful in a different way that someone else accepts. And I start opening up my mind. So I really think it's a tough concept because it's not just a here's one simple tip you can do, but I really want photographers to understand there's something really powerful about feeling something that your client is going to be in. It can be outfits, it can be makeup, it can be the music that you play, and then it could also be in the poses. How do you move your body? Tap into that, be open to that because your clients go through that. And when your clients see you tapping into that with them, they can let their guard down and they can say, this is an emotional connection that we're having. I can let my guard down and really be me. So one thing is really to start thinking about this. There's something much deeper to posing than just memorizing canned poses.
Yeah.
And I think canned poses are a great way to start as well. That's how I got started of, I think the first pain point was just me coming from the background of street photography and photographing my friends. And they would ask me, David, what do I do with my hands? And I would always freeze up, especially as a people pleaser. I wanted them to feel good, not just awkward. So I started just researching on YouTube poses for women, for poses for my girlfriends, because that's most of the friends that wanted to get photographed. And then I started just memorizing 3 to 5 poses, and they would work out for like a couple minutes. Then I would realize, oh man, I'm having another roadblock. First, this doesn't work on every body type. Second, not everyone wants to be a diva with their hands on their waist. And then third, what about for guys? What about for people who just don't want to conform to gender norms? So yes, utilize those canned poses, but understand and be aware when you do experience these roadblocks, and then question yourself, what do I do now? Because once you start redefining posing as a body language, you're not defined by canned poses anymore. You are limitless in terms of how you express with your body. Like, imagine you go on a date and all you can do with your hands is 2 movements and you are restricted to 10 words. Right? That's how we feel when we use posing as like these like 3 poses that we memorize during photo shoots. You get stuck. You're like, oh man, what do I do now? And it's a terrible feeling, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, you think about like going on a date where you feel free and you feel like you can express with your hands. I'm a very visual person with my hands. I'm using my hands right now. It helps me communicate. I get to use the tone of my voice and all these things. And that's how I want our photographers out there to think of the possibilities. When you tap into this, it's limitless. You get to think of poses on the spot and just feel and express.
Yeah, totally. This podcast is brought to you by the Unscripted Posing app, the one-stop shop photography app for photographers looking to up their posing game, streamline their business, and look and feel like a professional. With Unscripted, you'll confidently rock every shoot, capture those emotion-filled images you've been craving, and create a fun photo shoot experience for everyone, including you. Join over 200,000 photographers and search Unscripted in your app store now. I hear what you're saying, where it's like sort of having some poses in your back pocket is like a way in, where you're like kind of maybe break the ice in terms of, all right, like we're giving someone a little bit of something to work with, a bit of direction. But then beyond that, bringing in the emotion and really bringing in that feeling of how they want to like express and relay themselves and who they are is like the central part of what it's really about. Putting yourself, yeah, I also hear what you say about like putting yourself in their shoes and really feeling what they feel. And I love the dresses that you wear. They are fabulous. Like, I just think it's great to just, yeah, really like inhabit the role of the people in front of your lens to the extent that you're able to. This kind of brings me to my next question. And you've spoken about this a lot on the internet, so we don't have to stay here for too long, but I do want to touch on it because you say something about what it means to be photogenic. And I just would like you to talk on that point a little bit, because I think your perspective is really valuable here.
If we dissect the word photogenic, I actually kind of only found out about this today. If we break down the words, of course, there's photo that we know about. And what about genic? So genic means relating to genes.
Wow.
And that's why everyone's like, oh, you are born photogenic.
Yes. Right.
And that's where this misconception happens. I do think there are people born photogenic. What do I mean by that? I think there are people that are lucky to have been born in an area or culture or country that fits the standard of beauty of that era right now.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it's like, oh, when you take a photo, it kind of looks like whoever is leading the beauty industry right now. It might be one of the Kardashians. But back in the other times or different cultures, that might not be what is quote unquote trending in the beauty standard.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, yeah, I think someone can be born photogenic. They can fit the beauty standard that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
What I really believe in is that anyone can be photogenic. The Google definition of photogenic is to be attractive on camera, to be beautiful on camera. So what does it mean to be beautiful? What does it mean to be attractive? And that's such a subjective question.
Yeah.
I can be attracted to someone because they're beautiful. But what does beauty mean again? I might be attracted by their smile. I might be attracted to their kindness, other actions. There's like, there's so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at, let's say, someone who's, again, leading the beauty standards in America, like Kim Kardashian. We think about the iconic image where she like was the wine. There's a wine cup on her.
The champagne.
On her booty,
and like,
was,
yeah.
Yeah, the champagne and all that stuff. And then you think about how many people it took to make that photo happen. She did not just get up and take that photo. She probably had someone wake her up, make sure she had her beauty sleep. There was a whole crew of beauty glam squad. There was someone who put the whole idea and concept together. There was someone there holding her up, doing the lighting, doing all these things,
mm-hmm.
and then editing it. So we don't think about that. That's not what the beauty industry talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, this whole concept of photo shoots, and if we talk about it from a professional way, we understand the depth we go to create one beautiful photo, right? Lighting, makeup, setting, posing, all this different stuff. But then to the rest of the world, it's watered down and dumbed down to, oh, either you're photogenic like Kim K, so you get that photo, or you're not, and you can't get that photo.
Yeah, sorry. Just like, let's be real as well. It's beyond relating to genes with Kim Kardashian. Like, she's had a lot of other help, which I think is like what you're touching on. You know, it's like the genes. It's, she's not what she doesn't look like she did when she was born, I'm sure. You know, like there's that element too, right?
Yes, yeah. So that's what I mean too. It's like, yes, we can also chase beauty. Essentially, this is a talk of beauty. We can chase beauty to fit the mold and the standard now. Like, I'm near Beverly Hills and everyone like looks a certain way in Beverly Hills. You can do things to get there, whether you work towards it with your own body or with money or whatever it is to start fitting into that standard. Or you can also really start connecting and redefining what beauty means to you. And understand that everyone is inherently beautiful. If you're listening to this, you are so beautiful. You owe it to yourself to see that beauty for yourself and celebrate it, because we've got ourselves at the end of the day. So that's how I like to see being photogenic. You have to go and see it for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of what you touched on before about like identity and how like you might think of yourself, like your identity is not photogenic. But through the process of maybe deconstructing your identity and then becoming aware of the complexity of your identity, you're kind of more capable of that like fluid notion of seeing yourself as photogenic. And like you kind of talk as well about how you can teach your clients to be photogenic. And the way that I interpret that is that it's beyond posing, beyond finding their quote unquote good side. It's also about teaching them emotionally, teaching them like mm-hmm. more philosophically about beauty and about how that can look like a million different things, despite what our society shows us.
Yes, 1,000%, 1,000%.
I'm going to pivot a little bit here because I haven't addressed this yet, but you exploded on TikTok recently and your Instagram account is like super successful as well. And I guess there's the follower count, but on a personal level, I'm just curious, what does it mean to you to have such a large audience? And just in the context of the fact that most photographers don't really reach this level of fame, like a lot of photographers I know don't really have that many people on the number, on the little icon, like in Instagram. What has this fame sort of brought you and how has this changed your life? And what are the parts of it that you value and what are the parts of it that you might find a bit challenging?
It's definitely changed my life in so many aspects. I flew my parents out from Korea first class to visit me for the first time ever when they've always been the one to fly me back home while I was in college. Oh. I'm able to be in this dream studio of mine in Los Angeles. I get to have an incredible staff and not only take care of myself, but take care of them. So have more responsibilities and deepen my search for who I am and further my passion and ambition. And 4 years ago, I was like, oh, I want to have a dream studio. And then now my ambitions are way beyond that. So I think there's so many incredible things that's happened. You know, when it comes to how do I feel about it, first thing is it's just really damn cool. Like, it's really cool. That's like the first thing. But if I think deeper into it, number two, I'm very proud of myself because this isn't something I stumbled across. The little David from ninth grade in Korea who was living in a culture that really prioritizes academics. Mm-hmm. I always pushed for the things that I wanted to do, even though I was within the stress of making sure I get my GPA up, making sure I try to get into an Ivy League because everyone around me is doing that. And that's what we're conditioned to think. So going against all of that and going against the grain to say, I really like volleyball. I really like dance. I really like photos. I like design. And to always that David that always said, I want to do more of this. I know I'm going to get, my mom's going to barge in and yell at me and say, you should be working on your homework instead, even though I knew that I would do more of it. And yes, like if I look back at it now, I'm like, damn, David, you're still rebellious. Why don't you just like be nicer to mom and just like listen to her and work on your homework and get better grades? And, you know, I look back at it now, I'm like, that David worked so hard. And as he moved to college, he just was so persistent in making this whole photo thing happened. I was earning at first like $50 for photo shoots. And yeah, that went up a little bit to like $200, $300 photographing college students for the grad photos. That's nowhere near enough making enough. Mm-hmm. I might as well have been just working at McDonald's for a steady, mm-hmm. consistent shift.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, if I remember how I felt, I was like, yeah, this is the only way to go. But if I look back now, I'm like, David, you're either really, really dumb or you know something because it feels so naive and stubborn to think that something was going to happen, to be putting in that much effort and that much time and that much money. But I guess he did know something. He just worked so hard and he didn't see any other way.
Yeah.
And I truly, if I really think into it and sit with it, I really am proud. Because all of that, maybe I quit a day before. A lot of the TikTok fame came from quarantine. I couldn't start that. I couldn't take clients anymore. And I really could have given up at that point. And I don't know where I would be if I did and just said, I'm not going to have an optimistic view and start uploading funny videos of me on TikTok and then skits of me portraying the joys of what I do. I could have given up a day before I started doing that and having an optimistic view. So, you know, I'm just really proud of that, David. It really just goes to show, like, it's a decade-long journey. As cheesy as it sounds, just following after my heart and knowing that things will happen. And as I tackle more ambitious projects now, you know, I still have those feelings of, oh my goodness, I don't know if this is going to work out. But, you know, the only thing I do know for sure is my past and my history. And you know, if I think about all the challenges David went through in the last decade and to see all the fruits of the labor, I know as long as I follow my heart, amazing things will happen. Mm. So yeah, that's sort of how I see this quote unquote fame. And I'm really glad I found this when I found myself. I'm glad I found fame when my heart was about serving others. Not in middle school where I'm like, oh, I have fame. Let me do all these things to just look pretty and hot and all these things. And So a lot of my foundation under the fame, I've put a lot of work into, and a lot of that foundation is in serving others. And that's the thing that I feel like people feel a lot, my audience and my community, they always feel like they're given space to be heard and seen because it's always about them and serving them. This platform and this fame has been great in serving them more, expanding my team, creating jobs for people, which is something I never thought of being able to happen when I was just taking care of myself, barely paying rent. It's just been absolutely incredible and life-changing.
It's cool to hear. First of all, it just makes me so happy to hear that, like, you're able to say that you're proud of yourself and really sort of own that instead of, I don't know, deflecting. And like, I know you were saying before that it's hard for you to take compliments, but yeah. It just seems like such a testament to that solidness in yourself that you're talking about before, that like you're able to be able to recognize these things and be like, I followed my heart despite all the things that got in my way. And this is just kind of what came of it. And I'm really proud of myself. Like, I think that that's, I don't know. I just think that that's really nice. I just wanted to comment on that because that made me feel good to hear. Yeah. The other part of it is, I guess I feel curious about, was there a strategy around, you just couldn't really shoot anymore, so you sort of turned to TikTok to start growing your audience there. Was that a strategic thing where you're like, okay, I'm going to grow this so that when things come back after Corona, I'll have something to tap into? Like, did you know stuff about social media and marketing? And what did you study? Like, how did you put all of these skills together? How did you do it?
So first of all, I wish I can own up to that and say, yes, it was this brilliant mastermind plan for me to get myself here. I wish I could own up to that, because then I can start selling all these courses about how to market yourself to make a bunch of money. You know, no. It's absolutely just a shot in the dark, pretty much. If I think of it in the sense of truly, like, there was no intention, there was no strategy, there's no, oh yeah, let me do this so that I can grow an audience. It was never about growing an audience. I studied design in college, but design was really just to make my parents happy so that I could have a college degree. It was like the only thing that they will accept, because art, they wouldn't. In their minds, design was like, oh, it's kind of like architecture or something like that. So like, design, it might make sense in your head if you're listening, but truly I would skip classes to learn about photography online instead. So, you know, the thing for me is I didn't have any marketing background. I don't have any content creation background, no branding background. The one thing that I always did was think outside of the photography industry. I always thought about my clients. So the big thing I was thinking about then was, everyone in the photography industry is talking about posting their portfolio and their best pieces on Instagram. And that's how I feel like most people still, if I check out a Joe Schmo photography on Instagram, most people, it's just going to be photos after photos, portfolio work after portfolio work. It might have a model's name, a client's name. When I was really into that whirlpool of creating my Instagram in that way, I was swept up by this whole thing of, what is it for print, where I would photograph a model and then I'd be like, oh, this is so cool, so let me post this. And then the only people that would DM me would be other models, the models' friends. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, let's create the next best thing. And then I'll post the next best portfolio work. And it'll be more models. And then it's just this crazy cycle of not making any money or doing anything productive for myself. So at that time, I was really thinking about, what am I doing? Why am I just posting beautiful images and nothing's really happening? And I realized it's really just, I always bring everything back to human. Whether it's business or social media, I always brought it back. I said, I never talk about my work in this sense. Like, imagine I walked into a bar and like curated my social media the same way I would have a human conversation. I pull out this portfolio book and start flipping through it in front of them without saying a single hi, and then just pushing it forward into their face and saying, do you like it? Just double tap it if you do. You know, like there's no conversation. And I always brought it back to human and said, ah, can I talk about the beautiful things that happen with my clients? Can I talk about this little challenge that I had in photographing someone that I'm not used to photographing? Can I talk about why I started photographing people? And so I've always been, quote unquote, creating content. I say quote unquote because I never saw myself as a content creator at that time. But I always was creating content that was different from just how photographers in the industry were creating. I found a lot of inspiration from just outside. Like, how is wonderful people on the web creating content for others that created community, that small business owners were tapping into something deeper than just selling products. And so it was very natural for me when I said, okay, I have time on my hands now because I can't take clients. Mm-hmm. So I also can't be pessimistic and say, oh, this is never going to work out. That's the one thing I learned. I always had to be optimistic for myself, just problem solving. And I said, okay, well, TikTok is kind of like a cool thing right now. I see a lot of people dancing. I see a lot of people also sharing stories. I love everything. So why don't I just download it and just share the joys of what I do. It was never about growing an audience. I think a lot of photographers see my stuff and they DM me and be like, wow, your marketing is impeccable. I can't believe you did all of this. I'm like, it's not marketing for me. It's great. It's great because I do get lots of clients who see my content and say, wow, I want to work with that guy. But it's never about marketing. If I saw myself and that initiative as a marketing effort, I would have given up after like 3 videos and said, oh, this is terrible. This isn't getting like 3 views.
Right.
But it wasn't about that. It was just for my pure joy of like, I love seeing myself dance again to these like fun trends. I love getting into a little dress and then playing a little skit of how I transform my clients from shy clients to absolute baddies.
Yeah. And
soon enough that took off. And then people would ask me, David, how are you moving your body? So how do you pose like that? And then I was like, oh, I only learned posing for my clients because I'm a people pleaser and I don't want them to feel awkward. I didn't know people around the world were interested in how to pose for their own like photos with their camera and their iPhones. Then I started just answering prompts and questions. People would say, how do you pose if you're a woman? And then so I would get into a dress and teach them about posing as a woman. And then they would say, what if you're a tall woman? And then what if you're a short woman? What if you are a short woman with a tall boyfriend? And all these different things. And I'm like, let me serve these people just like how I serve my clients.
It's funny because marketing people work so hard to come up with things that people will want to hear. And you've just sort of done this thing where you're like, I just want to make people feel more comfortable, or I really enjoy doing this. And it's just sort of led you down this million billion follower wormhole where there are people
not
like
billion.
Soon. People are like tying themselves and not trying to get to this point that you've just sort of found yourself in. And I don't mean that in a way of, oh, well, you went to sleep and you woke up. Here you are. Like, you've obviously put in like so much effort, but the effort hasn't come from the desire.
Scheming.
Exactly, like the strategy and the scheming and the like just desire to get like the bottom line number, which I just think is the greatest thing in the world, because it's kind of like you've hacked the algorithm where it's like you're not doing like the hashtags and like all the things, you're just doing the thing that you really like. But I do feel curious about, like, so you've kind of like made this name for yourself as like the posing guy, and I wonder, is that passion for posing starting to wane a little bit? What's the next thing that you're gonna, that is maybe interesting you, that you want to start talking to your audience about?
Yeah. So my passion for posing is only growing. I'd say if anything that's waning is my passion for photography.
Interesting. So
I say that because the more I stay connected to the people that I actually get to affect and help transform their lives in any shape or form, it's me understanding that, oh, it's not just about me being behind the camera and clicking a button. It's about the much deeper things that happen. And it's me realizing that at the end of the day, I'm just creating a space for my clients to meet themselves. And it could be another photographer. It could be me creating a space for them to have tea with themselves. It could be space for them to move their body. Like there's so many ways that that can happen for them to connect with themselves and see themselves and find empowerment within that and to discover their identity and sort through that and find champion beneath all of that. And so it's me realizing, God, there's so many more things I can be doing. It's not just photography. The reason why I love posing as well is because it's so much deeper. It's if you really think of it as language, there's a whole study on language. There's a whole university course and curriculum and profession around just language. There's culture, there's all these depth. And that's why I just love posing so much, because it goes so deep. And yes, I'm known as the posing guy, the posing king. And for me, like it's kind of, think of it as this way of you're trying to feed a pill to your dog, but they're not going to just take the pill. You need to wrap like a bacon around it. And then you kind of like, it's like a Trojan horse, you know? The bacon is posing guides and tips to look cute and all these things, which is very important. Right, to take cute pictures is very important. I'm not going to take that away. It's important to me as well. But then the bacon, the real thing that I really want people to take away is just the deeper conversation that we've been having of, can you find a deeper connection to yourself, to beauty and to empowerment and to your identity by utilizing things like posing, by utilizing things like photos and creating an intentional space for yourself and then creating intentional community around you. What happens when the right people are around you? Maybe you don't need that cute picture. So for me, like the pill is what I'm trying to get to, except not everyone wants to spend all that time being philosophical. And I also can't do all of this in a 60-second video, which is why I appreciate something like this podcast. So yeah, it's a bacon wrapped pill. and I will always push the agenda. Sometimes I talk about gender norms. Sometimes I talk about culture with America and Korea. Maybe it's even sexuality. A lot of people were like, David, this is too gay for me. I'm like, what do you mean it's too gay for you? Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, then it gets so, you know, then like it gets so deep. Like, why do certain movements associate certain sexuality for you? So let's talk about this.
Totally.
So that's what I'm really passionate
about. That's what we're going to talk about on our next podcast.
Oh,
it's a whole nother. No, I just mean like we'll have to have you on again and just talk about gender norms.
Oh, I thought you already had someone who you're talking to that about. I'm like, that's great. That's a you really programmed this well.
No, it's just like a whole nother thing. Like, I just feel like there's so much there, you know, like why is pink
of course
for girls? Why is blue for boys? Why, you know, there's just so many things. It's just like unquestioned biases, just all down the line.
Yes.
You're just like, has anyone thought about why this is? Or like, you know, people just,
it's so fascinating.
Accept it. It's so interesting.
Right.
It's so interesting. Right. Okay, well, we're kind of starting to wrap up a little bit here. And I always like to sort of end with my sort of favorite question to ask everyone is like, what's the biggest lesson that you've had to learn the hard way?
The biggest lesson I had to learn.
Just like a time where shit just went really ass up for you and you were like, oh God, I know there's a lesson in this. Maybe it's never happened. Like, maybe you just have a charmed life. It's just, you know.
No. There's many downs here to get to where I am. I would say when you're seeking advice from people, because we always need the right counsel of people around us, really be mindful of who you ask for advice. So even as you listen to me, if you're like, I want to listen to David, like, who am I? Where are you? Like, what is our association? Why should you listen to me? Maybe you shouldn't listen to me. I mean, people love giving advice. And you know, I would be very cautious and aware of who that person is. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned. Like, the downfall of that was when I listened to everyone, especially in my college times, even simple questions like, oh my gosh, how much should I charge? And asking my broke college apartment roommate.
Yeah.
I don't know why that took so long to get to roommate. Asking them, how much would you pay for this? And they'd be like, what? It's like $50. And I'm like, well, what do you mean $50? And they're like, no one would pay for that. And then they start limiting your belief. And totally. I'm like, why? Like, why am I asking my broke roommate? Totally. Then that would also sort of like burn bridges and all these things. So, you know, when it comes to asking for advice, I would say become really specific. Only one who knows yourself, become really aware of where you're trying to advance in life. Have a couple questions and then bring that to the person who can actually help you, who have walked the talk, and ask them that specific question. Get really specific about advice and who you ask.
I love that. Okay. And we have a couple questions from our community that we've taken when they found out we were interviewing you. We sort of did a call out and some people wanted to throw in some of their own questions into the ring. This first one is from Alex from Byron Bay. And we've kind of covered this, so it could just be a quick answer for you. But how did you grow your photography Insta account so big? Was it from TikTok?
One thing that did happen was, you have to remember, this is all timing, which is why I go back to, you can't forecast good timing. You just have to be working at it, work at it enough, and someday it will come. The timing will work out. For me at that time, yes, I was growing big on TikTok. I think BuzzFeed, they wanted to do a feature on me, on their Snapchat, on their Instagram, like a compilation of posing tips. And then that actually brought me a lot of followers. Even though my TikTok was at about 1 million, I think my Instagram for a long time was still just shy of 10K of followers. But that, I remember BuzzFeed actually, that took it quite far. I think that helped me break into the first 100K. And the next thing was really jumping onto Reels. And obviously now there's a lot more people on TikTok and Reels, so it's going to be harder now. But it's really utilizing, how are people communicating? How do you adapt that into the way you communicate and enjoy communicating? So yeah, it was great timing. And then also jumping onto Reels, because I was also creating on TikTok.
This next question is from Christian from New York City. And they want to know, what is your thought process when you start posing women?
My thought process when I'm starting to pose women, or literally anyone, but let's just go specific to women, is, how do you want to feel?
Yeah.
How do you feel in the outfit that you have on right now? What do you want to see? What do you want to feel? And then I start moving my body and say, oh, do I feel cutesy in this imaginary dress that I'm wearing, that they're wearing? Mm. And I start guiding them. And then I should also then be able to see that and say, oh, it matches the vision that I have. And I photograph that.
This next question is from Emily from Florida. And she wants to know, if you had to give one piece of advice to someone in their first year, what would it be?
One piece of advice to someone in their first year, I guess, of that could have been more specific. Photography. I would say really triple down into what you love. Just keep doing what you love. Don't think about, if you're at a place where you don't have to think about money, just be a sponge. Soak up everything. Keep learning. Find who you admire. Just learn from that person a lot. Be really curious. Become their biggest fan. Become a part of the community. Just learn, ask a bunch of questions, go to their events, all this stuff, and then meet other people that are like you, and you just keep learning. You're going to start, whatever you learn from that person, you're going to start making that relevant to who you are as an entire person. You're going to start developing your voice, your identity. You're going to start realizing, oh, I have a passion for this, I find fulfillment from X, Y, and Z. And you start infusing that with this craft. And then you start doing more with that. And you start helping people or helping yourself. And from there, it's just like a snowball. And it's going to turn into something amazing, whether it's a business or something that's amazing for yourself, that's fulfilling.
And this is kind of back to me. What are some exciting things that we can see from you this year? I know that you kind of touched on it a little bit before, where you're talking about what's next after posing. And like, you talked about tea a little bit, but can you tell us a little bit about what's coming up?
I guess the tea is a new photography studio here in Los Angeles. So I am in that dream studio space that I talked about, operating under the business name David Love Photography, which is very reflective of the service that we provide, David photographing clients. And with me realizing my purpose and how I want to transform more, bigger impact, I realized I don't have to be the only one who can create this space for other people and photograph them. So We're going to be operating under Dasu Studios, a collective of photographers, a space that allows people to challenge the social norm, challenge the ideas of who they are, navigate their identity, find empowerment through creative expression. So we have this incredible space that we've invested a lot of money and time into creating into this urban oasis. It's so stunning. If you're ever around, you're going to be able to visit because it's a space that you can visit, have tea, you can dance, you can book a photo shoot. So much community involvement. This is my life right now. It's really just launching Dasu Studios. It's going to be, if this airs mid-September, you should be able to visit a week or two after. So if you're in LA, I would love to invite you to our urban oasis, our Dasu Studios, where you get to meet like-minded people and have tea, take photos, fall in love with yourself. Follow on Dasu Studios for more. For everyone else online, if you really want to learn posing, I'm going to be dropping another new course around posing, really just diving into posing. So be on the lookout for that. Just follow me. Just keep learning with all the free resources I put out on a daily basis on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. And soon enough, you'll find out about a course as well.
This is so exciting. I'll make sure to include all of this in the show notes for you guys. And yeah, I can't wait to maybe one day step foot in Dasu Studios. You're bringing so many things under the one roof. It is just incredible to just hear about a space that just encapsulates all of it. Thank you so much for joining me today, David. It's been such an awesome time having you on, and you've shared so many tips and also just like deep life philosophies. So I really, really appreciate your time.
Ah, it's so amazing. I love getting into the weeds and talking about the deep philosophy. So whenever you want to have me back to talk about gender norms and challenging why we think the way we think, I'd love to be back.
Great. Thank you so much. Can we get a little quack?
Yeah. let's see. here we go.
Thanks, David.
There was so much in this conversation and so many things to unravel. Talk about the beauty industry and gender norms. It's just scratching the surface. Gosh, we live in a weird society. But most of all, I guess I just found it to be a super potent reminder of the power of photography to help people access sides of themselves that they don't normally see. Here's a recap of the key takeaways of this episode. 1. Posing is all about body language. When you master the language, you open up infinite possibilities for expression. 2. When posing, put yourself in your client's shoes. Getting as close to feeling what they feel will help you know how to guide them into expressing themselves in the best way possible. And 3. Anybody can be photogenic. Working on taming the inner critic will help you gain access to the beauty in yourself that everyone else sees. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast as much as I did. As always, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast was created on the unceded land of the Bundjalung people, and we pay our respects to elders past, emerging, and present.